Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we talk about big ideas, practical strategies. I talk about the things that have worked for me and things I've seen have worked for other teachers, but also those big epic fails that I have learned from. And all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And right now, we're talking about this idea of what it means to prepare students for a creative future where they're going to inhabit an unpredictable world. And counterintuitively, as we think about this generative age, this space of AI, students are going to need a lot of skills that actually require low-tech learning. So we're part of a low-tech learning series. And today, I want to talk about one particular policy around the use of technology and screen time. So the background is the Los Angeles Unified School District has adopted one of the nation's most restrictive classroom screen time policies, and it will dramatically limit the use across all grade levels. So I want to explore, what do we like about it? What do I not like about it? Where does this approach work, and where might it be lacking a little bit? And to do so, not from a place of judgment, but from more of a place of curiosity. So without further ado, let's jump right into this week's podcast episode. During this upcoming school year, the LA Unified School District, or Los Angeles Unified School District, will be implementing one of the most restrictive classroom policies around technology. And under the new guidelines, students face firm screen time limits, and it's based on grade level. So grades K-1 will have no screen time at all. Beginning in the second grade, students are limited to as little as 20 minutes of screen time per day, and it will gradually increase in upper elementary to around 30 minutes a day. In middle school, it's capped at 1 hour per subject per week, so roughly 6 hours, and that moves to a total of 10 hours per week at the high school level. The policy does allow for some exceptions. That includes online assessments that are required, specialized technology courses, but it's definitely a departure from the adaptive learning programs, think iReady, for example, that I wrote about before and that we talked about in our last podcast episode. The district is also moving away from the assumption that every student should take a device home. In the elementary grades, more devices will remain at school, and families of students in third grade and above must actively opt in if they want their child to bring a district-issued device home. Families can also request paper-based homework, and there won't be a penalty. Beyond screen time, the policy includes stronger restrictions on how district devices and networks can be used. So certain sites like YouTube, gaming platforms, entertainment streaming services, they're going to be broadly blocked unless specifically approved for instruction. And teachers will be able to opt into that, but it's going to be a process. The district will also expand internet filtering and monitoring in a way that essentially says, don't expect privacy on your devices. Now, confession, I initially had a strong negative reaction to this policy because I only saw the headlines and the bullet point lists online. But then I thought I should actually read this whole thing from a place of curiosity. And what I found was a policy that was much more nuanced and thoughtful than what was being reported in a lot of the news sites. So I want to share what I think about the policy in terms of what it gets right, but also maybe some areas where I might change it up a little bit, improve it, make some modifications if it were me. All right, so number one, the first thing I like is it's not an outright tech ban. Most of the headlines have said, you know, they're banning screen time, they're pulling devices. That's not true. I've seen a lot of hype in ISTE around it, a lot of people criticizing. While this is true at the K-1 level, that's really not an accurate overall description. And I think it's important to recognize that what's going on is this is not an anti-tech move. This is not an un-tech move. This is a low-tech approach. And it's not only a low-tech approach, but it's one that gradually builds up that includes up to 6 hours of screen time in middle school and 10 hours at the high school level. I would describe a cap of 17% of academic time as a low-tech rather than a tech ban. So I love the fact that it's nuanced and it's not anti-tech. Now, do I agree with those specific numbers? I'm not really sure. I can see some real value in using Google Docs for writing and revision in an English language arts class in a way that might go beyond the rule of 1 hour per week, especially if you're including homework. I mean, the reality is students need to write essays and that will require a computer. So for me, you know, if I had to think about the ratio, I might go 70-30 in certain classes. I would go 90-10 in other classes. You know, there's a lot of math classes where I could see it being 95% non-tech and 5% tech, and certain ELA classes and stuff like that where 70-30 might be a better ratio. And so I think it's important that we recognize that this is not an outright ban, and that's a good thing. We just don't know completely if these ratios are going to work. And that's because this is a new thing, really significantly limiting technology. Number two, I love the fact that this approach feels developmentally appropriate. I've written before about why low-tech options are often more developmentally appropriate. They're more hands-on, more tactile than the high-tech options. They're more concrete compared to the abstraction inherent in technology. And they're often slower and simpler with more permission for imagination. None of this should surprise us. A laptop was not designed with a five-year-old in mind. It's designed for adults with adult bodies and adult brains. And guess what? We teach children. So I love the fact that LA Unified goes non-tech for K-1 and then gradually amps it up. I actually think that's a really developmentally quality approach. And I love the fact that by the time they're in high school, 10 hours a week really feels balanced and nuanced. I might up it, to be honest. Like I think given the fact that they're going to be taking potentially asynchronous courses in college, a higher number might be more developmentally appropriate. But again, that's something we need to think about. I think there are some moments where tech actually makes sense in K-1. While I generally don't want to see screen-based tests, online options work better than humans when it comes to reading fluency. Computers don't get tired, they don't get bored. So I could see some benefit of that. But of course, their policy allows for the exception of testing. Similarly, personalized phonics instruction continues to have a high effect size on reading outcomes. And I could see we're limited. Think 15 minutes a week of screen-based phonics instruction might actually make some sense. So I don't completely agree with it, but I think it's very developmentally appropriate. Number three, I love the fact that the new default will be away from taking the devices home. I love that LA Unified has shifted away from sending devices home with students. And on a basic practical level, it just addresses the daily challenge of students forgetting their computers or more likely their chargers. I don't understand this whole trend of like, I brought my computer, but not my charger. I've met so many teachers who are simply exhausted by managing devices that are constantly going home and back to school. But I also think this sends a message to students that technology devices are meant for learning. They're powerful tools for problem solving, for research, creativity. They're not toys for entertainment. And it sends a message to parental figures as well, that the default should be low tech, that that's what childhood should look like. At the same time, though, they're allowing for flexibility. If students need to use devices at home, they have that option. And I love the fact that for equity reasons, they've allowed for flexibility. Number four, they are being intentional about focus and attention. On the surface, it seems like screen time policy is centered on the quantity rather than the quality of time. And that's actually kind of a decent critique of it. But I actually think the strongest element of this policy addresses the larger issue of student attention and engagement. In the Depth Advantage, I added focus to the pre-existing deeper learning frameworks, and I viewed it as sort of a prerequisite. We can't have problem solving. We can't have mastery. We can't have deeper resilience if students can't focus. So I think it's important that this policy helps students with focus. Focus is a skill that students will need to master in a world full of distractions. And the goal is that the skill becomes a habit that eventually becomes a mindset of what Cal Newport calls deep work. Many schools have already banned smartphones at the full K-12 level. We're seeing bipartisan support ranging from conservative Texas to liberal Oregon. And this, I think, is a really great start, but many districts still allow for distractions on their Chromebooks, right? So if students can jump on YouTube, Roblox, whatever it may be, Minecraft, it's going to create a distraction. And so I love that we're deliberately limiting distractions. You know, for the longest time, a lot of experts have told teachers to simply make the learning more engaging. Meanwhile, students who have been raised with tablets as entertainment devices could still have access to things like YouTube and Roblox and all of those things and social media. Even the most engaging lesson on photosynthesis is not going to compete with TikTok. That's not going to be the case. And it's because these apps have been socially engineered as dopamine casinos, and we can't compete with it, right? I've mentioned this plenty of times before, but we have this process of stimulus, short-term dopamine boost, temporary happiness, and a crash. And it makes us inherently, at a brain-based level, addicted to our devices. I love the fact that they're saying, we're not going to let kids get distracted. We're going to focus on this. I also like the fact that teachers can still use these videos at the whole class level, and that they can incorporate the quality educational side of something like YouTube into their learning. So I love that there's flexibility built into it. Number five, the policy allows for exceptions. And I've alluded to this already. Technology policies need to be comprehensive enough to provide unity and clarity, while at the same time being flexible enough to allow for contextual differences between courses, between student populations, things like that. It makes sense to allow for exemptions in certain courses. It's hard to teach coding, graphic design, yearbook, journalism without the use of screens. You need them. True, you can do some coding by hand, but you're definitely going to need to actually type code into a computer. You can storyboard a documentary on paper, but ultimately, if you're in a film composition course, you're going to need devices. But notice that those courses are actually hitting the higher levels of the SAMR model, that redefinition stage. Instead of substituting a worksheet for a digital worksheet or a poster for Google Slides, they're using technology to redefine the learning outcomes. Similarly, many CTEC programs will allow students to continue to use professional software in a way that mimics the tools that they're going to use in specific trades. And here students will use technology in a deliberate and intentional way that still allows for hands-on learning. And finally, students who need it will have access to assistive technology. I think that's going to create some barriers, some issues, because it's a FERPA violation to explain, you know, hey, that kid can use a computer because blank, they have this disability. Kids are going to get confused. They're going to get frustrated. It's going to feel unfair. But in the end, we do need students to have access to assistive technology. So as long as they still have that access, I think it's really important. All right, so now here are my thoughts on where this policy falls short. And I realize talking about policy might not be the most exciting thing. I find policy really exciting, but now I'm realizing, like, oh my gosh, if you listen to this podcast and this is the first episode you listen to, oh, policy might not be it, right? Oh, well, too bad. We're still talking about policy. All right, number one, it treats screen time as a single variable. From what I could tell, this policy focuses on screen time usage at the individual student level. And while I understand the need for this, I think it's a little more complicated. For one, screen time isn't always at the individual device level. Imagine a class where a teacher shows multiple documentaries and students watch the videos and then fill out a short comprehension worksheet at the end of each class period. I would describe that as screen time. Contrast this with a class where students are blogging. They're outlining by hand, typing in a Google Doc, sharing the document with classmates, and pointing out specific words and phrases while they talk in person. I would argue that the second class, despite having more time spent on their devices open to the internet, is more human in its approach and actually includes more active learning, which we're going to get into in a second. If you walked into our mock trial meetings, I'm a mock trial coach, you would have seen laptops open at all times and students actively revising their work, but they'd also be turned away from their screens and focusing on eye contact and voice and body language. They were memorizing scripts. A screen use audit might say 2 hours online, but if you actually counted the times that they looked at their screen, in some cases it might be 10 minutes, but it could be two or three. One of my favorite strategies for student research is to have two students for every one device. Are we going to count that as a fully online screen for both of them or half time on screen for both of them? When they turn to their neighbor and summarize information before adding it to a graphic organizer, do we have them shut their laptops so the clock doesn't run on their screen time counter? You see what I mean? It's a little bit of a challenge. If students record a podcast and they're interviewing an expert, does that time where they are recording and interviewing an expert, does that count as screen time? What if it's a video instead? What do we count as screen time and high tech? Like, those are the challenges that I see. In Vintage Innovation, I described the mashup of low tech and high tech. I wrote about the need to use vintage tools and high-tech tools together and blending them. And the challenge I see is if we take this vintage innovation approach to tech, which we need to, are we counting it? When are we counting it? You know, if someone's making a sketch animation video and they're doing like Common Craft style and it's almost stop motion and they're sketching things by hand, but they're using a device to record it, does that count? So I think that's really important that we ask, like, what do we mean by that? Number two, the policy doesn't differentiate between active and passive learning. The problem with LA Unified is that they want to fix the screen time issue. And that's really good. That's a wise instinct. The screen time issue is one of both quality and quantity. And I think it's wise to ask, how much time are students spending on their devices? But the problem is that the policy measures minutes instead of meaning. True, we need to pay attention to how long students are on their devices. The time staring at a screen itself is problematic. But we also need to ask how students are using the technology. Does the tech integration help students think more deeply, create more meaningfully, collaborate more effectively, solve authentic problems? Is that happening? In other words, are we making a distinction between passive and active learning? Are we tapping into the connective capacity of technology and allowing students to do deep dive interviews with experts around the world? Are we tapping into the creative capacity of technology so that they can run digital models or solve complex problems or create podcasts and documentaries? Are we giving them the opportunity to use vetted AI tools for deeper learning so that they can ask questions and have in-the-moment feedback? And I think a good starting place to begin here is to say, does this develop deeper learning competencies that students need in an unpredictable world? Does it lead to what I call the depth advantage? So I think it's important to say, a screen isn't the problem, passive learning is. I realize that tech policies need to be somewhat pedagogically neutral. But my fear is if students are only using them for digital worksheets, if they're only using them for testing, then they don't actually end up learning how to use technology wisely and ethically. And that's my concern. Number three, it doesn't teach ethical use. And that's what I've kind of alluded to. If the goal of low tech is simply less tech rather than better integration, we end up with this mindset that says we should only use technology if you absolutely have to. If that happens, though, students never learn to navigate the technological landscape that exists outside of the walls of school. Like I mentioned before, screen time limits are a good first step. But students need to learn how to develop technology competencies. They need to learn how to use tech ethically and wisely. When I look at the ISTE standards at the student level, I find that most of them are the building blocks that they'll need for the future. And that's a sharp contrast to the shallow, consumer-driven tech approach that they're going to get often at home. And I don't mean that to be negative about, you know, people using tech at home. It's just the default tends to be entertainment. School is a great context for learning to use technology for problem solving and creativity, but that requires us to think deeply about the quality of technology rather than just the quantity. So for that reason, I think a flaw that I see is, are we making sure that when they use it, we're focusing on ethical technology usage? And then number four, I think the policy is a little too rigid with weekly quotas. While I generally support this type of policy, there are certain times, at the secondary level in particular, where it might be a bit rigid. Initially, I couldn't fathom a time where I would want more than an hour of screen time in a math class during a week. But then I thought about a class that really incorporates compacting and intentional AI tutoring and realized there might be a few situations where students need access to tutorial videos as they solve problems. Similarly, in an advanced AP stats class, I could see a unit where students just need to use spreadsheets for p-values and z-scores. They might need to run advanced diagnostics and numerical modeling. And again, the question here is, how is this being used? In a social studies class, we might have 3 weeks that are entirely tech-free, but then students work on a social studies podcast or documentary, and suddenly it's going to be more than an hour a week if you're including homework. Capping it at 1 hour fails to address the ebb and flow of authentic technology usage. In life, we tend to use tech in a way that's more like interval training and less like a marathon. We have times where we use it more, times where we rest from it and use it less, and that's actually something I want students to develop. So the bottom line, as I think about it, is this. Educational technology should be evaluated by the quality of the learning it enables, not merely the amount of time students spend looking at a screen. These types of low-tech policies are a great first step, but they feel incomplete. And my hope is as they implement this policy, they start adding some balance that incorporates a little more of the how it's being used and not simply the how much is it being used. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts? Also, don't forget to subscribe. That'll put it right there in your feed. And like, if that's an available thing as well. So subscribe, like, and leave a review. Those would be great options. The other thing is tell folks about it. It's one of the best ways to connect is through word of mouth. One more thing before we go. I want to say, if you have not signed up for my newsletter, it is at spencereducation.com. And you can find me on TikTok and Instagram, both at Spencer Education. That's my username. So please connect in short form. I make these little carousels with images. I love to sketch. You'll see it in a heartbeat. And then also I make short videos as well that are like little micro ideas. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.